World leaders get together this weekend to talk trade and trade barriers. From Marketplace in Los Angeles, I'm Andy Euler in for David Brancaccio. President Donald Trump is set to make a multi-country trip to Europe this week. It will culminate in Hamburg, Germany over the weekend, where the world's leading 20 economies are set to meet and discuss the global economy, trade, and a host of other things. Following this is Mike Sanders, Europe regional editor for our partner newsroom, the BBC. Mike, the U.S. and many other European countries, particularly Germany, seem at odds when it comes to trade and protectionism. Now, just how contentious do you think these meetings will end up being?
Very contentious, I think. I think Angela Merkel has laid out her stall very clearly that she's talked about no longer being able to rely on partners as we used to be able to in Europe. And that's a clear reference to the United States and also to some extent to Britain. But of course, Donald Trump responded with a couple of tweets complaining about Germany's trade surplus with the United States and with the rest of the world in general. It's about 18 billion euros, which is a bit more in dollars, every month. Also complained about Germany's lack of contribution, financial contribution, that is, to NATO, and wanted them to do more on that score. So there are going to be some serious bones of contention.
And a report released this week highlighted how some of the countries actually are lowering trade barriers in response to President Trump talking about setting some up. Is the rest of the world becoming less protectionist as a result of the American president, do you think?
I think only incidentally. It seems to be that the G20 is committed to an anti-protectionist stance, and therefore, in order to show Mr. Trump that he's taking the wrong road, they have been more restrained, perhaps also because they're frightened of retaliation. But this group, Global Trade Alert, came out with a report saying that the G20 countries introduced 29% fewer measures that hit US companies in the first 6 months of this year than they did in the previous year, which is perhaps an unintended consequence, but it seems to be the case.
Mike Sanders is Europe regional editor for our partners at the BBC. Mike, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, Andy. It's nice talking to you.
We have ways of storing our electronic data in the cloud, but the material things in our lives still require physical storage. Occupancy rates in many storage warehouses are approaching capacity. As Marketplace's Adam Allington reports, developers and even startups are seeing this as an opportunity.
You've heard about the big brick-and-mortar apocalypse, right? Well, as more malls, supermarkets, and furniture stores fold up, self-storage developers are moving in.
Storage is a big business. It's a big business that very few people ever talk about.
Michael Pau is the CEO of Trove, a San Francisco-based storage startup. He says the market for mini storage could soon grow into a $30 billion niche.
I think the latest statistics are that 1 in 11 American households currently rents a storage unit.
But even with a trend toward urban living, with its smaller homes and apartments, people are still accumulating things.
People have more stuff than space. That's just true.
Simon Rothman is a partner at the venture capital firm Greylock. In terms of a real estate investment, he says storage makes a lot of sense.
You put a metal box on a piece of land off the highway, put a padlock on it, and you get what amounts to almost, you know, an annuity.
As mini storage is cheap and easy to build, some cities are worried they might swallow up real estate that could otherwise be used to generate more jobs. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Georgia has a new law to support the state's music industry. The sector generates about $3.7 billion each year, and lawmakers hope to enhance that with tax incentives. But many of the state's public schools have reduced music classes to help fund subjects like math and reading. Amy Kiley of WABE in Atlanta has more on the future of Georgia's music industry.
What do rappers Killer Mike, Lil Jon, and T.I. have in common with some backup horn players for the group OutKast? They all went here, Atlanta's Frederick Douglass High School. Band director Micah Wynn gives a tour of the school trophies.
These particular plaques are the most important.
They're from when Douglass bands won top state honors. The school still wins awards, but they're less prestigious. Wynn gives a number of reasons for that, but one represents a broader trend. Many elementary schools have cut music.
The middle schools, they start getting the acts next. And of course, they're the ones that feed the high schools.
The question is whether cuts to school arts programs will hurt Georgia's music workforce. Research is hazy about whether, say, former band students make better concert stagehands. But just across state lines, Nashville could offer some insight. When Georgia leaders crafted the new law, they said they wanted to compete with Tennessee's Music City. It has a nationally recognized music education program for all K through 4 students and a high school record label with student artists. God of my weary years. Nashville Program Director Lori Schell.
As we prepare students for workforce readiness, we're thinking about what careers are available here in Nashville.
So back in Georgia, advocates are making the case that tax incentives aren't enough. They say music needs to be a bigger part of the curriculum. State Superintendent Richard Woods seems to be listening.
Anytime you have fine arts within a community, it really sends a message about the heartbeat of the community.
Georgia's new law is supposed to spur at least $600 million in economic growth in 3 years. But the state's unlikely to mandate spending at the local level. In Atlanta, I'm Amy Kiley for Marketplace.
A federal appeals court says the Environmental Protection Agency can't loosen controls on emissions of some greenhouse gases. At the request of some big oil and gas companies, EPA Chief Scott Pruitt had suspended enforcement of a rule to limit emissions from new facilities for 2 years, while the EPA reviews Obama-era regulations. Now the federal court says Pruitt doesn't have the authority to set the rule aside during the review. In Los Angeles, I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.